My name is Selene. I am 12 years old. Today is November 24th, 2018, and I am speaking with B, who is my neighbor and honorary grandmother. And we are recording this in Michigan. So B, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
My childhood was in Pascagoula, Mississippi, and we lived right across the street from the Gulf. And because it was warm and it was a neighborhood full of kids, we were pretty much outside all day long until it was time for dinner. Good childhood. I was the only Jewish kid in Pascagoula, which worried my parents, but it never bothered me. We made houses out of the Spanish moss and the roots of the big trees. We used the driveway for roller skating and jump roping and all that kind of stuff. We could come in the house if it was raining, but otherwise we were supposed to play outside. The Pascagoula was a shipbuilding town, and I was 6 years old when the Second World War started, and 10 years old when it ended. So a lot of things had to do with the war that were in my childhood. We would all go down to the beach to watch when a big aircraft carrier was being launched on its maiden run from our shipyard to Mobile. And we would see international military that we thought was pretty funny, because the British guys wore these funny shorts and the French guys wore these berets, which as children we thought they were hilarious. My best friend was Lois Ann Walker, and both her mom and her dad worked in the shipyard. It was a good childhood. When I was 11, we moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and that was a whole other part of my life.
Okay, thank you. So, are there any funny stories people tell about you from when you were growing up?
Oh, the main one. Somebody came to visit us when I was about 3 years old, I think, with a movie camera. And so we had these films of me walking with my father on the beach. And he reached down to hold my hand, and I pulled away and kept walking. And every time the family would show that film, somebody would say, "See, Bibi always said, I can do it myself. I can do it my way. It started when she was a little girl. See?" Families have ways of telling a story over and over again.
To the point of driving you crazy, probably. Okay, so what are you proudest of, personally and professionally, in your life?
Proudest of. Somebody asked me this question once, a Spanish teacher in Costa Rica, and I said I was proudest of my children. And this was a youngish woman who said, no, you're a feminist, you can't say that, you have worked and so forth and so forth. And I said, well, you asked me what I was proudest of, and I would give you the same answer today, only I would include my grandchildren, because they have grown up, all of them, with values that I'm really proud of.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I think you can be a feminist and a strong, independent woman while still being an amazing mother and...
Well, but you say, what are you most proud of? I was a teacher, and in various ways. I mean, I I taught high school. When I worked at Borders, I was a trainer, which is a teacher. When I retired, I taught English as a second language. So obviously that was something I really liked. Yeah. And proud of that too.
Cool. Can you tell me about the dumbest thing you ever did in your life? I'm looking forward to this one.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by dumb. There are a couple of things that I remember that I'm really ashamed of. One of them was walking. This must have been in the mid-60s with my then husband on a street in New York at night. And we saw this couple about a block away, and he was really hitting on her, and we couldn't decide what should we do about it. Should we intervene or call the police or whatever? And what I'm really ashamed of was what we decided was that this was a family affair and none of our business. Can you imagine? The good news is I would never, never do that again. I had another incident many years later where it was a similar situation, that I was on a path in the woods near here and saw a guy hitting on this girl. And what I did was take out my cell phone. I was going to call for help, but just looking at my cell phone freaked him out and he disappeared. And so then I got, you know, people from the Women's Center and so forth came and were helpful to the woman. But at least I can say I learned something from that stupid thing I did.
Yeah. Tell me some favorite work stories.
Work stories. Well, I'll go back to feminism. Okay. When I first started to work at Borders Bookshop, 1975, and I was 40 years old, or just about to turn 40, and I was the only woman working on the floor. There was another woman who worked as a cashier, but they had this sort of a station wagon van sort of thing that they called the truck, and for some reason they needed somebody to drive it, and it never occurred to them that a woman could drive it. But it turned out I was the only one who knew how to shift gears, so I got to drive the truck.
That's cool. Thinking of the jobs you've held, tell me about your most or least favorite.
My most favorite and my least favorite were maybe the same one. And that was teaching English in high school in Brooklyn in the mid-60s. And I absolutely adored it. I loved the kids. It was a real challenge. It was a poor area, so the kids needed a lot, and it was so much, it was just such a pleasure to work with them. At the same time, in a way, it was my least favorite because it was exhausting. It was being teacher. It was going to court with them. It was dealing with just more than one person could deal with. It was 5 classes a day. I really felt that as a new teacher, they should have had 1 period a day where you could just observe experienced teachers or learn, but it was just exhausting, even though I loved it. Still hear from some of the kids, which is sort of amazing. Because that's a long time ago.
All right. Well, what job or goal or, I don't know, occupation that you've had gave you the greatest sense of purpose? Like you felt like you were really doing something.
Mm-hmm. Teaching is always like that. Because you go backwards and forwards in your head all the time. You've got the kids, or in, with the English as a second language, they were adults and often old people. But you reflect on what teachers influenced you. You know that you might make a difference in some of their lives. You're not stupid enough to think you're gonna, you know, change the world or change everything, but you try.
I think that's a wonderful answer. And teachers, yeah, they're pretty great. Can you tell me about one of the most difficult moments in your life?
Difficult. I'm remembering something. I was teaching. I had two school-age kids. I'm not sure about the reality of this. I just remember feeling overwhelmed. And sometimes that's in your head. Sometimes it's real obligations. But I remember going to the guys next door. We lived next door to a couple of men who were just so kind to me and let me in and said all the right things when I wandered into their house. It wasn't like they were strangers, but they were only neighbors, crying that I just couldn't manage. And they got me through it. Just kindness.
Yeah. Have you ever had a profound religious or spiritual experience?
Well, that's really funny, because I was maintaining that all this new spirituality was so crazy, and no, I couldn't get into that, and I wasn't religious, I didn't believe in God. And one of my friends laughed at me and said, well, you could say whatever you want, B, but anybody who's ever been in the woods with you would know that you are a spiritual person. So I guess that's my religion.
Being with nature?
Well, in so many ways, that's really true, because I've watched other people respond to music and to art and the things that are supposed to really move you. And, you know, I have some interest, but it's not like they move me. But watching things happen in nature is really very moving to me. I thought about what my friend said and realized there was probably some truth in it. That those are the things that I respond to most deeply.
It is magical in mm-hmm. a way, I guess.
Yeah,
definitely. In what ways do you believe you have changed the world the most? I suppose this is pretty similar to the previous question. You're probably going to say teacher, huh?
Well, no, I would say that my family, for instance, thinks that when we went in the mid-60s to New Orleans to work with civil rights groups, that we were, quote, participating in changing the world, and we were...
Well, I'm sure you were.
Well, but the reality is that we really weren't. What happened with that trip was it changed me. To the point where after that I was more involved in doing things that might make a difference.
What did happen on this trip?
I watched mainly black kids, kids. They were in their, I was in, they must have been in their 20s, I guess, who really had a lot at stake, do some incredibly wonderful things. And I didn't do anything really on that trip except accompany folks who were doing stuff. But it changed me, and I could do more later.
Yeah. Do you have any regrets?
Yeah.
Of course.
One big one.
Care to elaborate?
No, one big one, that I only speak English. Terrible, terrible regret on that. I can... No, it's not half decent. I can... One-on-one with a very patient person, on a very limited range, I can understand and deal with a little bit of Spanish. That's not what I mean I regret. I regret really being an English speaker only. The good ending of that is all my kids are multilingual and grandkids.
And now you're following great along with my Spanish class at school.
Mm-hmm, a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm
mal tiempo.
And I'm about to get you to do some long distance Spanish with friends in Nicaragua.
How would you like to be remembered?
I don't really know. That's a very individual thing. When I think of people who are dead, who were important to me, I'm not sure they were important to other people in the same way they were important to me.
Yeah, I guess it's for every person in your relationship.
Yeah. So that's a hard one.
Can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Okay. Margaret Mead had a book that I don't remember the name.
Who's Margaret Mead?
An anthropologist. And in anthropological language, she talked about three kinds of societies. One where change was happening so slowly that the kids could learn anything they really needed from their grandparents, that would be fine. The second was sort of a horizontal learning. And her example was immigrants. Their parents couldn't teach them, grandparents couldn't teach them, so they learned from maybe a brother who had come to the new country first. And the third was the one I thought was really important. And she said, when a society is changing really fast, you learn from your children. And I've always thought that was incredibly true, and that people have to be open to learning from their children. Yeah, you bring your own background, you bring everything you've learned and your parents and your grandparents, but for learning something new, I felt that my children taught me maybe more than anybody else.
Yeah, and I'm still helping you with your Apple computer tech.
Yeah. It's not just technology, it's ways of thinking too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, definitely. Young people are underrated.
We'll keep them. Yeah.
How has your life been different than how you imagined it would be when you were young?
In some things, almost by accident, it's been similar. I'll give you an example. Good. Two things I'm thinking of. Like the Louisa May Alcott books, where she grows up and lives in this place where they take in boys, and it's a group, situation with young people. And then I remember on the beach when I was in high school listening to one friend who went to the University of Chicago. A few of the guys were older than we were and were already in college. And I was thinking how wonderful it would be to live in a university town. And and some of that has, I mean, I'm sure I guided it a little bit, but so many things in life are just lucky. But we lived 25 years in a collective situation with other people, with young people, and lived in New York, in Ann Arbor for the past 25 years. So that's kind of amazing to me.
Yeah. What is the best thing you've ever done? And there's many ways to interpret this question.
I have no idea. I can't answer that one.
Okay. You sure?
Mm-hmm. I would have to think about it for months or something.
All right. Well, yeah, we've only got half an hour left. Tell me a great story you know about an ancestor.
Ancestor.
Or some family tradition, heritage, an interesting story that has been a part of your childhood.
Well, my given name is Benita, and it's for my grandfather Benjamin, who died before I was born. That's why in the Jewish tradition you name a kid after someone who's already dead. And there was a time, and we didn't know much about him other than that he was an immigrant. He came and lived in Chicago and eventually was a partner in a pop factory, the Chicago Beverage Company. But one time I found out because my kids were singing the You'll Get Pie in the Sky When You Die song.
What?
And my Aunt Sil started singing along. And my kid said, Aunt Sil, that's a political song. How come you know that song? And she said, well, because my father was a socialist. And I said, how come we never knew that? And she said, because Grandma was always afraid if he got too involved politically, so after he died, she didn't talk about it. But I thought that was really interesting that I had inherited something that I didn't even know about.
Yeah, that's... I actually haven't heard that song. Care to sing it?
You don't want to hear me sing it. Not recording anyway. We'll do it later.
What events in your life shaped you the most as a person?
Probably moving around, just because I got to see different parts of the world and know different kinds of people. Like, okay, moving from Pascagoula to Nashville, Tennessee, then started college in Madison, Wisconsin. Then I was at Barnard in New York for a year, and then my husband was in the military, and we were sent to Hawaii, so my undergraduate degree was from the University of Hawaii, which was really interesting, and then moved to Decatur, Illinois, and started graduate school in summer school at the University of Illinois, and then moved to New York, and then did my master's degree at Sarah Lawrence, which was a whole other kind of college. And what happened after that? Moved to Ann Arbor. It's just every move exposes you, and I liked it. It wasn't a negative for me, to just different ways of thinking and new people. And that's partly why I really hate that I only speak English, because it limited me to the English-speaking world. I would have loved to go to more places. but not just to go and look, and be able to talk to people.
Definitely. Tell me a favorite memory of me.
Of you. Oh, so many.
And please don't make it embarrassing.
Oh, I have so many memories of you. How can I find a favorite? We have a picture that we see all the time of me holding you in just all by ourselves sitting in a church pew on the day that you were baptized. And I love that one. And then there are all kinds of memories of you doing things with Ed. You did so many things. You guys drew and you played music and you read stories. And you want me to come up with an anecdote that I can't come up with that's just a favorite.
Yeah, because I'm mean.
I know. I've just known you since the day you were born, because I was having hip replacement surgery in the same hospital where you were born. And so Ed was running back and forth between visiting you and your mom and visiting me. And so it's, what, almost 13 years I've known you. And a favorite anecdote. Oh, my gosh. Ed, help me. You have a favorite anecdote? It's just been amazing to me that my kids are so far away. And we've had you here for your whole life. I just love it.
Yeah, and it's been wonderful knowing you guys, too, because...
Your grandparents are far away, too.
My grandparents are far away, too, so... Yeah.
So we get you.
Yes, and I get you, too. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, no, it's very, very nice. And what I was thinking is, and I thought about this in numbers, that I'm 83 now and Ed is 94. And if Ed makes it to 99 and I make it to 88, we'll see you go to college.
I bet you're both going to make it over 100.
Well, we're hoping to.
Okay, finally, thinking about your family many generations from now and knowing that they may hear this recording, and my family, because... You're practically a part of it. Is there anything you want to say to them? Any wisdom or advice for surviving, I don't know, post-apocalyptic United States?
No, I really don't have any advice. It's, as a non-religious person, it just annoys me that I won't be around to see what happens. And what I really would like, and nobody's come up with a way to do this, I would like to come back for just a few hours every 5 years, just to say, all right, what happened? What happened? What am I missing?
As a semi-religious person, I personally believe, and you also have this bond with nature you were talking about earlier. I think in a way, you'll sort of become one with the earth. And maybe you'll be able to sense what's
that we survived
your
Trump.
Soul. Yeah. Oh, come on. You'll live to see the free ages. I'm sure you will.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Okay. Anything else? You get to decide.
I guess I do have some advice. I had a housemate once that I really respected, and he was involved in a political campaign, and his side lost, and he was working with students, and he came home, and he said, I'm just never going to work with students anymore. They are devastated. The loss just, they just, like, don't know what to do. From now on, I'm only going to work with Quakers. And I said, how come Quakers? He said, well, for Quakers, it's good if you're on the right side. You don't have to win everything. And I thought that was really important.
Yeah. I could probably learn from that lesson, too.
Yeah, it's the most any of us can do is be on the right side.
Yeah. Anyways, thank you so much for doing this interview with me.
Thank you, Selene. I love you.
I love you too.